Growing up, I loved playing computer games, but I have not found something in adulthood that scratches that same itch. Video games don't do it. I can't use that controller. It's just not it for me. But oh my goodness, I am so glad I recently started playing June's Journey. Okay, June's Journey is like I Spy meets Carmen Sandiego, meets The Sims, meets horror movies. It's so wild and it's so, so fun to play. June's Journey is a hidden object mystery game with a captivating detective story taking you back to the glamour of the 1920s with a diverse cast of characters. Each new scene takes you further through a thrilling murder mystery story that sets the main protagonist, June Parker, on a quest to solve the murder of her sister and uncover her family's many secrets. June is fabulous. She has a fabulous little hat and feather in her cap. She's at this family estate on this gorgeous island that you can decorate, which you know that I love to do. And then as you're going, you go into different rooms of the house. You find clues that are going to lead to the suspicious murder of June's sister and brother-in-law. It's so dark. Like, you're looking for clues inside of a murder scene photo. But also, all I want to do is find the trophy and the riding crop and the muddy footprint that might be a clue about, wait, was there another person there? It's so intriguing. It's so fun. I love playing it. At the end of the day, just sitting on the couch, you know, that state of mind where you're not ready to go to bed yet. You don't want to be watching TV anymore. It's sort of just background noise. I want to be looking around my little island for clues. And that's why I love having June's Journey. Right now, I'm in the chapter where we are really uncovering some salacious information. There seems to have been a third person there the night of the murder. And that is not what we believed at the beginning. So, you know, I'm ready to figure out more about this mystery third person because I think it might be the key to everything. And so you better believe I'm about to dive back in, and you can do just the same. Escape reality and immerse yourself in the world of June Parker. Download June's Journey for free today on iOS and Android.
We made it through another week. Mm-hmm. If you can believe it, sometimes I can't. And yet, it's true.
Time is passing.
And it's time to do our favorite thing, which is to shout out our amazing patrons.
Thank you, patrons. We love you so much. First of all, we have our champions for actors' rights. It's just one person joining the movement this week, but a movement it
indeed
is. Mm-hmm. And it is for actors' rights. Lindsay Knoll, thank you. We love you.
Thank you, Lindsay.
Thank you, Lindsay.
And we are also welcoming a few new vessel heads who I think might be pretty excited about this week's movie. But before we get into that, let's say a big thank you to Carol, to Dana Bullinger, to Jenna Richardson, and Heather Turner. Welcome aboard, vessel heads.
Welcome
it's
aboard.
Great to have you.
We hope Woo-hoo. We hope you're thrilled about what you're going to hear about soon. And another person who I hope is thrilled. I'm thrilled that she joined Toni fucking Collette's inner circle. Let me tell you what. And that's Sierra Gillett. And welcome to the circle, Sierra.
Welcome. The circle is ever expanding.
Ever expanding.
Because we all love Toni fucking Collette. That's why.
That's why.
And if you love Toni fucking Collette, head on over to patreon.com/TSDW podcast where you can support us. And, you know, we'll talk about Toni Collette a lot. You won't actually be supporting Toni Collette. You'll be supporting us.
You will be meeting her as we've always promised. That isn't something
it's
we can promise
circle.
You. It's her inner circle. I mean, come on.
And we're almost at 100 patrons.
So close.
And once
we're like
so
six
close.
Away. So if you want to get in on the ground floor of some bonus episodes, you're going to want to join.
Yeah, once we hit 100, we're going to start releasing bonus episodes. I already have tons of ideas
about
what episodes we could do.
Wow.
Including, but not limited to, Hocus Pocus.
Mm-hmm. Henley's on a mission.
I fucking want to do Hocus Pocus, so please head on over to Patreon become a patron.
Otherwise,
so
we,
I can talk about my favorite
movie. We won't
movie.
Let Henley watch it. Unless we get 100 patrons, she's not allowed to ever watch it again. And she loves it, so don't do that to her.
Help Henley see Hocus Pocus again. And until then, enjoy this week's episode. We love you.
This is Emily,
Henley,
and Sammy. And you're listening to Too Scary, Didn't Watch.
Everyone, welcome to Too Scary Didn't Watch, the horror movie recap podcast for those too scared to watch for themselves. I'm Emily, and I'm too scared for scary movies.
I'm Henley, and I'm also too scared for scary movies.
Me, and I like scary movies. I like telling my scared friends about them, and this is what this podcast is for.
It's what we do.
Correct. Now you know. If you didn't already, and you took a wild guess on a brand new fucking random podcast, then hey, this is what we do.
What we do.
This is what we do. What we also do is say, what's up with us? So what is up with us this week?
Okay, you guys. So it's getting a little colder here in New York. It's not that cold yet, so I'm obviously a wuss. But I've already broken out my heating pad. And if anyone does not use a heating pad, I'm going to tell you right now, it is like a game changer. Having a heating pad is honestly the best thing. I think it's my favorite thing I own. It's my favorite thing that I own is my heating pad.
That's a fun question. Favorite thing you own. A heating pad is a good one.
I love my heating pad so much, but I've also recently discovered that I need to set some boundaries with my heating pad.
Oh God!
And I'm not exaggerating. I need to have some rules around the heating pad. Like, I don't think I can use it on weekdays. Cause like,
oh my God, that's
really strict. I feel like that's wrong.
Okay, convince me otherwise.
So you can only be hot on the weekends.
So here's what happens. So first of all, I'm working from home.
You get
right?
Too comfortable.
So I'm not going anywhere. Once I put the heating pad on me, I like can't get up again. It's so hard to get back
up.
Okay,
what about weeknights?
Yeah, I work like later in the night, so it needs to be like maybe like 8 p.m. afterwards I can start using the heating pad.
No heating pad during work hours.
No heating pad during work. Like, that's just the rule. I think that's the rule now. Yeah.
Wow. Do you do, what are we talking? Is it on your back? Do you sit on it? Do you lay it over your lap?
Oh,
it's always on
my belly. Always.
Okay, great. I like to move it around. When I'm with a heating pad, I like to lean against it on my back for a while. And then I'm like, okay, great. Now it's like a little blanket. Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Top
that was
legs.
Fun. Now it's on my belly.
I always have it on my belly.
And
always.
We need to mix
it
up. It
just makes my tummy feel good.
No. Maybe that's what you just trying a new relationship with the heating pad.
No.
Okay, fair. You really considered it and then you gave your own answer and I respect it and fair.
What about you guys? Do you guys use a
heating
pad?
Mine is similar. You've already tried to get me to purchase a Washington-based heating pad cuz I left mine in Los Angeles and I'm not going to do it. What I do miss is my bidet, and we haven't talked
do.
About
yep.
bidets
yep.
in a
yep.
bit here, and
of course, that's
now,
your favorite thing. Emily, we need to know what your favorite thing is
now that
next.
I have to use a toilet that doesn't have a bidet, like, I don't know, a big loser. It's really unpleasant and I hate it and I just miss it. And Emily, I remember you had bought one and I'm wondering, we never got an update. I feel like it didn't work out for you, did it?
I have no update because it is, you're
you haven't
hate
even
this.
Haven't attempted. It wasn't that it didn't work out.
I haven't attempted. Because I was going to do it. I thought it was going to be like an easy thing. I could do it. My bathroom, as you know, is now complete and the one thing it's missing is a bidet. But I got nervous that I was going to have to like do something with the water line. As soon as I heard water line, I was like,
but you're
I'm
so
out.
Good
I
at household stuff. You could do it. I I believe in you.
Oh, thank you.
It's not too hard. You just turn the little main line off. Just the little screw counterclockwise or whatever.
But where's the
it's
screw?
It's like the same thing that when your toilet's overflowing, you like turn it off to stop the water running. It's that same thing.
Oh, it's in my toilet.
Easy peasy.
Oh, I could do that. I thought it was like, you know, like if I had to go outside of the house turn a thing off.
With a bidet attachment? No. Full bidet, maybe. Bidet attachment, easy peasy. Sponsored by Tushy.
Sponsored by Tushy. Our list of sponsors is just, it's out of control. And real.
Yeah, real. Very, very real.
Long. Yep.
One other thing I just wanted to say real quick was a quick apology to Toby Hooper.
It's Tobe. It's Tobe, and that is a name.
Tobe in two episodes of films that he directed, Texas Chainsaw Massacre and Poltergeist. He died in 2017, so I'm sending apologies to him up above.
Apologies to up above.
Well, yeah, and you know, we can just think about it like we were on a nickname basis.
Yeah, we call him Toby. We call him Tobe.
We should just call him Tobe.
Really, but what's up with you, Emily?
I bleached my hair.
Yes, she did.
You know this.
It looks so good.
Thank you. It's the only new thing that has happened to me all year. It's fun. It's weird. I don't think I've ever done at least what feels to me like such a drastic appearance change. It feels big. It's not that big. It's just hair, but it like feels. I look in the mirror because I just did it. I look in the mirror and I'm like, oh, like I'm like surprised every time, and my eyes have to adjust. But I just needed something.
I gotta say,
I'm already
used to it because it feels like your hair is meant to look like this. I really love it. I mean, but Emily looks good with every hair too. But I'm really feeling this one.
Thank you. It was my dream. It was my dream hair that I was always a little bit like, ooh, that would be a big choice, and you'd have to like stick with it for a while because it's a whole fucking thing to bleach your hair. So I never did it. But hey, man, it's end times. So who cares? Like, who
gotta have
cares?
Fun while we can.
I don't have to worry about the future at all. There is no future. So go. I just fucking did it, and it's fine.
Love it.
Thank you. I feel very supported. It's very nice.
Good.
But that's pretty much it. Oh, I guess I'll give a kitten update. Who's like, he's so big now.
Aww.
He's so big. He's now has the fluffiest tail of any of our cats.
Oh, so he's like part Maine Coon, maybe.
I think he's. I'm fairly certain he's part Maine Coon. He's getting big.
He's a little teenager.
He's brave. He's a little teen, so he's a little annoying. He's very loud. He just like makes a lot of noise. he finds ways to make a lot of noise. But he's such a sweetie, and I love him so much. And he's just doing so well. And can you believe he just walked right into our yard and our lives? And it was meant to be. Our sweet boy. Sweet boy.
I love him. I love him.
He's good.
Oh, we should get into this week's movie because it's a long one. And it is The Abyss. It came out in 1989. Written and directed by James Cameron. Starring Ed Harris, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, not my Mary Elizabeth.
not that one.
Michael Biehn and Todd Graff, and it is streaming on Amazon Prime. And you know, for all our listeners out there, you better believe this is a vessel movie.
Ooh,
big time
vessel movie.
Yeah, the theme for this week's horror was an underwater horror, which because my God. Water
it's
is
very
so scary.
Mm-hmm. It's the scariest.
So scary. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. We were all keeping our fingers crossed that, what's that movie? Is it literally called Underwater?
Yep, it's called Underwater.
Yes.
That Kristen Stewart flick would win because we all wanted to watch it. And it lost comically, like by a huge margin instantly.
Yeah. Instantly.
Nobody cares about that movie.
I guess not.
So we did Everyone Cares About This Movie, which is cool because I bet it's way better, which is why you care
by
about it.
By one vote against Jaws, mm-hmm. we were I feel like the original idea was to try to make Emily finally talk about a shark movie, because as our diehard listeners will know, she is very scared of sharks.
Very, very, very.
But she lucked out by that one vote. So don't ever let anybody tell you that your vote doesn't matter.
Exactly. Exactly. And this is what we're talking about.
The stakes are this high.
It's this right here.
Because I was kind of busy with work, I did watch it. But I think, Henley, did you also watch it?
I watched the first hour and a half.
Okay. So we'll start by tag teaming, and then I'll finish us off on my own.
Take it right over. I should have watched only the last hour.
I thought about asking you to, and then I was like, that's pretty weird. Hi, everybody. It is cocktail hour, and this week's cocktail is a Waters of Chaos. Not so much because of what happens in this movie, but what happens in the making of this movie, which sounds like a real nightmare. To make this drink, you will need 1.5 ounces of genever, 1/4 ounce of white rum, 1/4 ounce of green chartreuse, 3/4 ounce of lime juice, and 1/2 ounce of simple syrup. You will shake all ingredients with ice and strain into an ice-filled old-fashioned glass and garnish with a lime wedge. Genever and chartreuse are pretty expensive, but so was the making of this film, so it's all part of the theme, baby. But they're also really delicious and worth the investment if you're trying to step up your home bar. Cheers.
James Cameron, a lover of the long film.
Oh, so long and so, like, so much work goes into his, they're big films, and he's
okay,
like,
okay, so that's really where this movie gets interesting. I was tipped off to this by a listener on our Instagram, Julie Ooh. Ward. Thank you so much. And also if you just read like one thing yeah. about this movie, you find out, but we should get into the trivia mm-hmm. of The Abyss. Oh, Emily, you are gonna hate the state of actors' rights on
it's
this
not
film.
Good.
God damn it.
It's really bad. It's probably the worst one we've done. It's the worst.
When did this movie come out?
1989. Okay, first of all, Ed Harris wouldn't even talk about this movie for like decades.
Oh my God.
He said that he had such a traumatic experience making the film that he refused to go into detail about it for years. One of the few things he said about it was, asking me how I was treated on The Abyss is like asking a soldier how he was treated in Vietnam.
Which is a little
okay, yeah,
a little,
I mean,
extreme.
Like, but Ed, I hear you, and also Ed, my man, maybe not that one, maybe not that metaphor.
Also, I mean, it is really, really quite crazy though. So they actually filmed.
What happened?
They did film 40% of the movie underwater. All of the actors had to get scuba certified. And they had, I think, the largest underwater set maybe to this day ever built. They like found
how many underwater sets?
Probably not a ton, because they're very expensive and seem really scary. Especially this one, God. Which was built in a abandoned nuclear reactor.
Isn't that wild?
So they filled it with 7.5 million gallons of water. And that's where they built like a whole underground rig thing, or underwater rig thing. And like, fact that I learned that I thought was interesting. I don't know how deep this thing was, but this is just, you know, for the logic of the movie. Every 32 feet you go underwater is equal to 1 atmosphere of pressure. And so like 64 feet.
Whoa, that's
it's
not that much.
That much, right? And they go really deep in this movie.
Why would anyone want to do that? We're not meant to be underwater. We are certainly not meant to be deep mm-mm, underwater. Mm-mm. What are you thinking, people who do that?
But because production was so hard and time consuming, they like never finished a scene in a day. Everything took a long time. James Cameron asked the actors to pee in their wetsuits to save time. So they just wet themselves. And James Cameron and Ed Harris both almost drowned. Ed Harris reportedly punched James Cameron in the face when he kept filming after Ed Harris was drowning. Also apparently punched some, like, the diver that was holding him down while he was drowning, because they thought he was, like, he was going up too fast and you can get the bends.
You can't do that.
But he was literally drowning and he's like, well, if I don't go up, I'm gonna drown. The main actress in it, Mary Elizabeth Mastrantonio, had a full mental breakdown on the set. Michael Biehn said that there was a day in which, in the break room, people started throwing couches out windows to relieve their frustrations, which is like, who are these really strong actors throwing couches?
No, I have a story too. Yeah, no, I didn't drown, but I saw a crazy thing. People throwing couches out of windows. Yeah, no, I definitely had similar experience on the movie. Yeah.
Ed Harris also said that he just spontaneously burst into tears driving home from set one day. And I was like, is that not something that people do regularly? Because I feel like I've done that many a time and I wouldn't necessarily report it to, you know,
the press.
That's just a regular tough day at work for me.
Wow.
Another thing Ed Harris there said to explain to Entertainment Weekly, he said, we were guinea pigs. In a way, Jim wasn't quite sure how it was all going to go down. In the drowning scene, I was screaming at Mary Elizabeth to come back and wake up, and I was slapping her across the face, and I'd seen that they'd run out of film in the camera, and nobody said anything. And then Mary Elizabeth stood up and said, we're not animals, and walked off the set. They just keep slapping me around.
She's also topless in this scene. It's like a big dramatic scene where she's topless. They're slapping her, like punching her in the chest, and he just let it keep filming while the camera was out of film.
Oh my God.
Awful. Just awful. He sounds horrible.
He does.
Orson Scott Card described working with James Cameron as hell on wheels. He claimed that Cameron was nice to him. He claimed that Cameron was nice to him because he could afford to walk away, while he was miserable and unkind to everyone else. He also stated that unless he changes his way of working with people, I hope he never directs anything of mine.
Oh my God. Yeah, I don't think any of these actors ever worked with him again. Michael Biehn had worked with him on his two previous films. He did Terminator and then Alien and then this, which is a pretty great track record. And Michael Biehn was in all three and then never worked with him again. But he's apparently supposed to be in one of the Avatar sequels, so.
Okay, one of, my God.
There's supposed to be like four.
It's insane. For who? For who?
How old are we going to be when they come out?
Dead. I mean, we'll all be dead.
We've been hearing about these sequels for so long. So long.
Mm-hmm.
The last thing I wanted to say is just that there's like the main romantic relationship. We'll get into more of this later, but it's like a recently separated couple in the middle of a divorce. And James Cameron has been married 5 times.
5? Interesting. Seems like maybe he's difficult.
I don't think is unrelated to, yeah, all the rest of this stuff. But so he said that he based the character of Lindsay, who is the main woman in it, Mary Elizabeth, and he based her on Gail Ann Hurd, who is the producer of this film. And they were dating and then got married and then got divorced during the like early production of the movie. So their whole relationship went through its life cycle during like pre-production and production of The Abyss.
5 marriages is a hell of a lot of marriages.
It's like, yeah, why are we getting married? I mean,
why are we getting married at this point? Especially when you're like, okay, fine. I mean, I've been divorced, so I gotta say, like, 1, sure. 2, maybe even you know what? You were hopeful again. We got to give you that. If you're the third spouse, you got to be like, well, I don't know about the number four and five. Come on.
Number five, I think, has actually been the longest, though. I think they've been married like 15 years. Most of them were like 2 or 3 years.
Then I'm wrong. And he figured it out. And congratulations.
He had a lot of practice and he finally did it right.
There you go.
James.
Good for you, James.
Okay. Should we watch this trailer?
Yes.
Let's watch the trailer.
God, I hate that bitch.
Probably shouldn't have married her then, huh?
Hang on, gentlemen.
Here's a bottomless pit, baby. 2.5 miles straight down.
A dance of light. It was the most beautiful thing I've ever seen. I don't think they mean us any harm. I don't know how I know that.
Whatever happens is up to us.
That guy scares me more than anything that's down there.
Well, we all see what we want to see. Coffee looks and he sees hate and fear. You have to look with better eyes than that.
This one's not for me.
Yeah, Emily, what are your immediate reactions?
No, thank you. Oh, my God. Oh, no. No.
It is really scary, but
it's so scary.
I don't think this other than the fact that underwater is scary, I don't think this movie is too scary.
No, it's very okay. It's very 80s, and it's not really a horror movie. I'd say I think it's PG-13 too.
PG-13, and it's like an action movie.
It's an action movie.
We're gonna be recapping.
I mean, that
action
makes sense. Mm-hmm. That like feels like his vibe. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, I don't know what. I think we should just get into it. I think we should just start talking about it.
I think we should just get into it.
I have tried a lot of meal kits in my day because I don't like to cook. I need as much help as I can get when it comes to meal times. But a lot of the kits I've tried, you know, they leave a little something to be desired. They're not super great quality, or maybe there's not great variety, or they're feel just kind of unhealthy. So imagine my surprise when I found Marley Spoon and discovered it doesn't have to be that way. You can have it all. I'm so happy this podcast is sponsored by Marley Spoon. They created the best tasting meal kit money can buy, and with my code TOOSCARY, you can get up to 25 free meals. They have over 100 meals to choose from each week, so you will not be getting bored. Last night, I made a shrimp burrito bowl that was so good, and tonight I'm making a Shion-style cumin turkey burger with pickled veggies and 5-spice fries. Excuse me, am I a 5-star chef? You have any idea how boring all the stuff I usually make is? This is such a treat. And usually for something like this, I would pay probably $40 to have something delivered to me, and it would probably be gross and soggy by the time it got here anyways. So thank God for Marley Spoon. And you can customize many of the recipes. So whether you're looking for vegetarian, family-friendly, low-carb, they got you covered. They also have an online market of pantry essentials like snacks and ready-to-eat options. I'm telling you, you can have it all. I got a kit to make cookies in my first box. So experience the most personalized meal kit today with Marley Spoon. Head to marleyspoon.com/offer/too-scary and use code TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. That's right, up to 25 free meals with Marley Spoon. One last time, that's marleyspoon.com/offer/TOOSCARY for up to 25 free meals. And make sure you use my promo code TOOSCARY so they know I sent you.
Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. Bite Clear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
So we start in a submarine, a U.S. submarine. They are having some trouble. They've noted a sound that is coming towards them. And, you know, it's a classic submarine scene. Everything is red. It's a bunch of people who are shouting orders at each other and saying things like, "Captain, I note the sound is coming towards us, like 60 meters, 120 meters, you know, like very.
And then, yeah, it's like 120 meters, like nothing goes that fast, that kind of shit.
Yes.
Cool.
So, they then get hit with whatever this thing is, and water starts pouring into the submarine. It is very scary, very tense. Things are not looking good for these folks.
Right. And the captain says, release the, like, emergency, whatever, like, floaty thing that signals that we're in trouble. So they release that and basically go down. We, as an audience, see a light zoom by the submarine that looks not like a fish or a missile. This is also kind of in the end of the Cold War. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of the, like, Soviet backdrop of, like, oh, is it the Soviets? It's not.
It's not.
There is, don't give that away too quickly, though, Sammy, because there is definitely lots of talk of Soviets.
That's true, but we see immediately the light.
It is not the Soviets. Unless the Soviets have figured out a way to have a really incandescent, beautiful alien-like presence.
True.
In the ocean.
Could have.
I wouldn't put it past them.
Sub goes down. Basically, the, like, light thing shakes up the submarine. They can't see what's happening. And when they can see again, they're going straight into a wall underground, like rocks. And basically, I think, yeah, crash and not fully explode, but it's not good. And then the U.S. government is notified. There's a big, big ship, another vessel. So many vessels in this movie.
There are so many vessels. That's just one vessel.
That's just one.
Wow.
This is number two. And it's a big military ship. And they get the info and they're basically like, we've got to go down and find out what happened. Was it the Soviets? And that
probably yes.
And they basically commandeer a experimental underground drilling, like oil drilling rig. This woman Lindsay, our one of our main characters, who is, for some reason, I guess she's called because she designed this underwater rig. She's the architect of it. And the guy running it is Ed Harris. His name is Bud. And they get the call that, you know, the U.S. government is commandeering this. And they're like, well, hey, wait a second. Like, we didn't agree to this. And they're like, we'll pay you 3 times your average salary. And they're like, oh, okay, hell yeah, cool.
Hell yeah.
Which is like, whenever the U.S. government is like, hey, go check out this weird thing. We don't know what it is. Ask.
We'll throw money at you.
More than 3 times, I feel like.
Yeah.
That's not also, that much.
Yeah, Ed Harris, you're also getting a little bit of that feeling that you get from, like, Event Horizon. And
it's feeling like Event Horizon already. Well, no, thank
it's not
you.
Nearly, it's not.
Don't worry. It's not. It's not going to go there.
But you know the feeling of, like, the crew, the
yes, the ragtag crew of, like, yeah, we're
like Alien.
Yes,
also.
Like Alien. Except I will say I feel like they're a little less well defined in this than I've seen in other movies. There's one or two standouts, but I feel like, you know, we talked about The Thing too, where like you kind of get a sense of each of their personalities. I don't think you'd get as much in this one, but no. Apparently in the extended cut, you do. I watched the...
Oh, well, you got to watch the 3-hour extended cut.
Honestly, the thing that's given the most care in terms of trying to have like character definition in this beginning portion is defining Mary Elizabeth, aka Lindsay, as being a bitch. Everyone calls her a bitch.
Yeah, in the trailer, the first thing we get is, God, I hate that bitch, which I was like, oh my God, okay.
Yes.
Okay, 1980s, we are just doing that? Cool.
Someone calls her the queen bitch of the universe.
Jesus.
Very cool. Is she the only woman on this crew?
No, there's one other woman.
She's like one of the guys, though, you know?
She's one of the guys.
Oh, yeah, you know the
type.
Does
she also call Lindsay a bitch?
Yeah, I think she says something like, I think she's the one who calls her queen bitch of the universe, maybe. I can't remember.
So it's okay. Look, you're either one of the guys or you're a bitch. And that's the only option for women. And if that's not enough, then go cry at home.
They're all upset that she's joined the crew because obviously she's not been there for a period of time while she's estranged from her husband, Ed Harris.
Yeah.
And they're all pissed that she's back. And she's like, I'm here because I built this fucking thing.
Right.
And she's not a bitch at all.
No, she's not a bitch, but
she's
so
really nice.
What the US government is doing is they're sending like a SEAL team to this rig to investigate. And so it's like this like ragtag group of oilers, like a blue collar crew meeting like this very like military SEAL team guys. And, Lindsay basically hitches a ride with them and is like, if they're going, I'm going. And so that's how we all come together. And yes, we find out that Bud is her ex. Oh my God, can you believe it?
Can you believe it? The tension.
What
I mean, that's a horror movie in and of itself.
What are the odds?
One crew member that is kind of the standout secondary character is his name is Hippie, and he has a pet rat. And I kind of think Hippie is hot because he looks a little bit like Scoot McNairy. So just throwing that out there.
Cool. Sure. Sure. Okay, I see it, I guess.
Immediately, Bud and Lindsay get into a fight. She says something like, I invested 4 years into this rig. And he's like, you only invested 3 years into me. And she's like, well, I have to have priorities, and like storms out. And he gets so mad that he throws his wedding ring into the toilet, which in an underwater rig is like that blue chemical stuff that apparently he like throws it in and storms out and then comes back a moment later and fishes it out. He's a romantic at heart. He fishes it out, though, and it like dyes his whole hand blue. And it's blue for the rest of the movie, which is kind of fun.
Fun. Maybe he still has feelings for
you
her,
get that sense.
Despite all of it.
Maybe.
Crew and the SEAL team are getting ready to go down to basically investigate the, like, sunken submarine. And SEAL team has this, it's called oxygenated fluorocarbon fluid. And it's basically oxygenated water that they say is what you can breathe this liquid when you're really, really deep to prevent your lungs from imploding. And this
Very
is
cool.
a real thing. This is actually a real thing. And the Hippie is like, that sounds crazy. And he's like, give me your rat. And he grabs the rat from him and sinks it into this little tub of this oxygenated fluorocarbon fluid or whatever.
No.
And Hippie's like, come on, man. No, like she's you're going to kill her. You're going to kill her. She's drowning. And the SEAL team guy's like, no, like, don't worry. I breathe this myself. Like, yes, it's a scary like adjustment period. Like she's got to get used to it. And you see the rat.
No, she doesn't. We don't need to do an experiment on the rat.
You see the rat like struggling and freaking out, but then kind of acclimating to it and breathing normally underwater. And this is real. They just did it for real on this rat, which is it really just blew my mind that we can actually breathe liquid. I just had no idea.
It's really upsetting to watch, especially knowing afterwards that it is real, because the poor rat is like really struggling.
It's really scared. They actually cut it out of the UK version because some UK veterinarian deemed it like not okay, like that it's animal cruelty, which, you know, fair.
Yeah, just because it's not going to die doesn't mean it's not cruel to put it through.
Yeah, the AHA, the American Humane Association, also was like, this movie's unacceptable because you literally drowned a rat on screen.
Yikes.
So they dive in to go to the sub, and it's creepy and spooky, and underwater is just really fucking scary, and the fear of deep water is called thalassophobia. I wrote it down because there was a BuzzFeed article once that was just like photos of really scary, you know, like underwater cliffs. Like just looking at that, it gives me so much anxiety. I really get stressed. I think if you don't have a fear of water, this movie's not going to be scary for you at all.
Is there anyone though that could look at like deep, deep, deep water?
I don't know.
And not get scared?
I don't know. If you feel that way, please let us know, because
I like can't
how?
Even fathom
how.
It.
Yeah.
How?
It doesn't make sense. Water is so scary. Deep water.
Well, it's the same as space. It's this existential fear.
Yeah, because it's you're so out of it's so not where we're supposed to be. And you feel so...
Yeah, you're at such a disadvantage. And it's so dark and big and you can't possibly see.
And everything else there is evolved to live there. And so anything...
Everything else there is used to it.
Anything has the upper hand over you. Ugh. I hate it. So a few of them go into the submarine. It's full of dead bodies. Obviously, the whole crew died. So there's dead bodies floating. There's one, a crab crawls out of his mouth, and it's really gross, and it's apparently James Cameron's brother, and it was a crab crawled out of his mouth for real. I guess I don't really know how you would fake that, but I was just imagining holding a little crab in your mouth until someone says action, and then having to let it crawl out of your mouth is just so gross.
Ew. I didn't realize that was a crab.
And also, like, act dead and, like, not react.
Yuck.
They looked like huge spiders, but I guess that's all that crabs are.
Crabs are underwater
spiders.
Yes.
Underwater spiders.
Ugh, gross. So one of the crew members sees this happen and starts to have a panic attack in their underwater spacesuit. One thing that's literally what it is.
Pretty much.
An underwater spacesuit. Mm-hmm. One thing that's happening throughout this whole scene, too, is, and anytime they're underwater, really, is just this constant, like, Darth Vader breathing noise in the background.
The breathing is so scary.
It's just like, like, constantly in the background. And so this guy starts having a panic attack, and obviously his breathing gets elevated. He starts to feel like he's going to pass out. So Ed Harris is like, don't worry, you just stay here by yourself. I'll go forward. You don't just hold on to this rope and don't let go. And if you need me, just tug on the rope. So you know how that always works out really well.
Like, starts panicking and he pulls the rope and it's like jammed in between a metal thing that immediately like cuts it. And so he pulls it back and it's just an end of a rope. And so he's really panicking and we don't see what he sees, but we see that he sees something very bright, like the lighting just really changes in the little compartment that he's in, and he just freaks out. And then it cuts to outside of the submarine. Lindsay is in basically like a smaller little like explorer sub thing. You know, those are like one person submarine things.
Cute.
It's very cute.
It's so cute. It's like such a cute little submarine.
a little baby submarine.
And power goes out, which we saw the power go out in the opening scene with the submarine. What after, you know, the thing flew by.
The light.
So the power goes out. She's, you know, trying to turn on her comms like, hello, hello, can anyone hear me? And then sees this like phosphorescent creature looking at her through the glass of the submarine, it's not too. Then it looks at her and then like zooms off, I think. And that's it. We don't fully see too much yet. It like almost looks like it could be a jellyfish or like an like a new species of
one of those like deep sea glowy guys.
I wouldn't say it looks like fully alien yet, but the speed at which it moves is unlike any known creature for sure.
It feels very, it's not scary either. No. Like this
and she
creature
doesn't look scared.
Is, no, this creature is very nice. It looks like it's friendly.
It looks friendly.
You could leave
cute.
You could leave your children with it. It's very like zippy, like zips around. Mm-hmm. It's rainbow colored.
Mm-hmm. It's nice.
Fun.
Everything's nice about it. Mm-hmm.
But they all make the power comes back on. They make their way back to the main rig. The SEAL team is reporting back to the surface saying like, we didn't get a good look at it. It could have been the Russians. We're not sure. Like there was definitely some sort of attack. Could have been the Russians, and the general or whatever is like, all right, we got to head to phase two, which I believe is that they need to go down to the submarine to disarm the nuclear warheads that, because this was a war submarine. And so it does have weapons on board. And so they're basically like, you got to go down there to disarm those so that the Soviets can't come and steal them, basically.
And another thing we should mention is that all of this is, they're on a clock because there's also a hurricane that's supposed to be coming. So they're trying to beat the storm so they don't get caught in the hurricane.
Yes, the hurricane's coming. The main SEAL team guy, his name is Coffee, played by Michael Biehn, and they start suiting up and they're gonna go do this right now, apparently, even though there's a hurricane coming, which seems like a bad idea.
Oof.
But they're like, we're under orders, we're going. And they go in, it's called a moon pool. You know, within a submarine, this isn't like Deep Blue Sea 2 in any like underwater movie, where they have the pools within the submarine that basically you like go into the water through this pool. And like the physics of this just really blows my mind, because these are also real things. And it's something to do with air pressure and whatever. And
weird.
Anytime I see them in movies, I can't believe that they work and that it's not just flooding the submarine. And so if you understand the mechanics of a moon pool, please let us know. A running theme, I think, these past 2 weeks has been, we don't understand these types of things.
And we're not going to look it up. And we're just waiting for somebody to tell us. So if that's you, just do it, please.
So Coffee and the other SEAL team guys.
There's a character in another movie named Coffee, isn't there? Why is that sticking out to me? Like, I feel like another like vessel movie.
I don't know. Nothing's jumping to my head, but I believe you. And listeners, if you know.
Listeners, if you know.
But so they're jealous. Out in their little like smaller explore. I think there's two smaller subs within this rig that you take out through the moon pools. And they go out and basically Bud is like freaking out. Lindsay, they're like, we got to get out of here. The hurricane's coming. We can't leave while they're out. One of the little submarine things has a little mechanic arm that they need to be able to unhook from whatever they're connected to. They can't unhook the whole underwater rig starts moving like this big rig. The whole thing is moving by the force of the hurricane. Eventually, Coffee and them come back in, I think. Right, Henley? What do they do? We see them disarming the nuclear warheads.
I don't remember.
I think we do.
I'm so fucking worthless.
It's okay.
I can't remember that specific thing, but I think something that has happened by now, which is we should note, is that Mary Elizabeth Winstead, Lindsay, has been like, everyone needs to be aware of how they're feeling. Mm-hmm. Because when you are under this amount of pressure, it can create a type of sickness called high pressure nervous syndrome,
right,
which can make you feel like paranoid and strange. So she's pointed out to everyone, like, monitor your symptoms, make sure that you're feeling okay.
Again, underwater is very scary. These things are real. But okay, so they're trying to unhook. The whole station starts moving, and they're unfortunately on the edge of a underwater cliff, and they're moving towards it, and it's really stressful, and they stop just short of it. They finally, like, I don't know, get control of the rig or whatever. I don't totally understand the mechanics of it all, but they stop. But then right above them is the big military ship, which is going through the storm, and they're kind of calling down. And a big crane breaks off of the military ship into the splashes into the water. It's like headed straight for them because they're right above. And so they're like, this huge crane is going to fall on top of you. They're bracing for impact. They look, it barely misses them. It falls basically right next to them. Big old phew. Thank God.
Huge phew.
But then it teeters over the edge and falls into that, I think we could call it an abyss. And
there's the abyss. That's it.
The abyss.
Mm-hmm. Falls, it hooks onto a like rope thing that is connected to the rig and pulls them down. And it's a really stressful scene, and they see it happening. And so it's just like a minute of the rope, like, and they're like, oh fuck, hold on to something.
Oh my God. Can you imagine like falling?
No.
Like what? Also in the water, like you're in the water and you're falling. Like, what?
And the crane that fell was the communications of the top ship. So they lose communication with the ship. They're tumbling. Hippie puts his rat in a plastic bag, which I really liked because he's like, oh, the hurricane's coming. But I mean, he'll suffocate in in the bag. He must have left a little air hole open. But it's really sweet. There's a part. Sure. So the rig starts, you know, crashing, and water is coming in. They're trying to close off all the seal hatches quickly. It's one of those stressful scenes. Apparently, very few stunt people were used. So there are scenes where water is really rushing in and knocking people over. And those were just the real actors. And it looks like dangerous for sure. And there's a scene where the rat gets away from Hippie and it's floating in its little bag, and he's like, no, and reaches and gets it just in time. But I think in that moment blocks a hatch from closing, and then the moon pools in this scene are going crazy because when it's tumbling about, you know, the laws of physics change.
Yes, I was gonna say the same thing. Yes.
And so water is pouring in through this now, and we see a section of crew members get locked into one place and basically I think drown. Bud is banging on the glass to try to get to them, but the hatch is locked, and then Bud is racing to get to safety. And a hatch is closing on him, and he sticks his hand in at the last second, and he is saved by his titanium wedding ring, which holds the force of the
symbolism.
Thank God he didn't throw it in the toilet.
Thank God he fished it out of the toilet.
Wow.
And crew members come and pry the door open from the other side, save Bud, pull him in, and now kind of the main crew members that we met in the beginning are safe in airlocks in some section of the rig, and the rig hits a bottom, and would you believe it, they're on the edge of another cliff into an even
even
deeper abyss.
Oh my God, we got abyss on abyss.
Abyss on abyss. So now they're, you know, regrouping. They've lost contact with the people in the boat. One of the people in the boat, by the way, is the guy from Schitt's Creek, Henley. Did you notice that?
Yes.
Which guy?
The yes. mayor?
Rolling shit?
Rolling shit. Yes.
He's only in the beginning. Like, I guess I don't.
Yeah, he comes back a little bit more in the end that you missed, Henley, but not much. He's definitely just has like a handful of lines.
I loved seeing him. In my notes, I just wrote Schitt's Creek. So then they're regrouping. Things have not gone well. Things are not going the way they'd hoped they'd go. And things are looking even worse because it ends up that, you know, they're in this airlock. They only have so much oxygen. They have approximately 12 hours of oxygen before they all suffocate to death.
Very bad.
Lindsay has named this thing that she's seen, right? Has this happened yet?
No. First, she goes to... She basically is trying to buy them more time, I think. And I don't totally know what she's doing, but she's like, I will swim to...
Water walk
to this other part of the rig and basically get more oxygen from there. I don't know. I didn't totally pay attention. But basically, she's got to do this one underwater thing in order to extend their, you know, security amount of oxygen. Mm-hmm. So she's going out in her, what did you call it? A space?
Underwater spacesuit is the technical term.
Say it is like the, you know, from the neck down, it's just, it looks like a regular kind of wetsuit. But the top up, it's the glass kind. So it does look like a spacesuit. More than, you know, a scuba suit. I guess this is how deep water diving looks like, right?
Probably.
So she's out in that and she's trying to fix something and the power goes off again. And it's really,
okay, we know what this
really
means.
Dark. And from the abyss comes a small little alien thing. Similar to the one from before. Phosphorescent, really beautiful colors, especially in this dark, dark light. She looks instantly like she's not afraid at all. She looks like enraptured by it, like she's captivated. And then a really big one comes out of the abyss. It's
the mommy.
Kind of like, it looks like a huge stingray.
Mm-hmm.
And she just reaches out and touches it, which I thought was insane. But I gave her the benefit of the doubt and thought maybe it has like a kind of magnetic draw.
She does another dubious thing with the alien a little bit later
on. Yeah, I feel like she is not cautious enough for being.
She has no boundaries with this alien.
No, she needs to set up some boundaries like that. Like you'd need
like Kelly and the
heating pad for sure. No touching aliens on weekdays.
We are not touching them on weekdays.
Not before 8 p.m.
You're at work. We don't do it at work.
Yeah.
Lindsay.
So she touches it and her hand kind of goes into it and she just looks amazed and excited. And then she rushes back to the crew and explains to them what she's seen. And she thinks that she's explaining to them that she thinks that it's an alien who's trying to make contact with us. She calls them a
NTI.
Non-terrestrial
intelligence.
Yeah, non-terrestrial intelligence. The next thing that I remember happening, though, is that the alien returns in like but it's taken the form of a saltwater creature. And it kind of. It's like this circular saltwater tunnel that flows through the ship and enters the room and comes up to face Lindsay. And when it comes up to face Lindsay, it takes on her face. So it mirrors her face and she's like, oh, amazing. And so she smiles at it. And then the saltwater alien guy smiles back at her. And then the saltwater alien takes on the form of Ed Harris. And Ed Harris is like, wow, this is wild. And then Lindsay, this is the next dubious thing she does. She takes her finger and she just straight up pokes the alien in the middle of its face, then brings her finger back and puts it in her mouth.
It's really crazy. I wrote it down too, like, this bitch.
this
fucking bitch.
Bitch. Honestly, this queen, I said, bitch of the universe. I said, bitch.
You can't just taste an alien like that.
You can't. And honestly, I'm sorry, but especially not during work hours.
We are at 4 p.m.
It is the day at work. And Lindsay, bitch, we are not doing this.
We are not tasting aliens today. No.
I said, bitch, you can't just taste an alien.
I said, bitch.
Oh my God. Yeah, no, I was shocked and horrified, to be honest with you.
So is everyone else.
It's not okay.
Everyone else is like, what are you doing? Stop. And she's like, no. She's like, no, it's okay. It's salt water. Like, it's, she's like, I needed to taste it to prove that I knew it was salt water.
It's the least scientific interaction with aliens I've ever seen. So it then kind of retracts and is going back through. It came through the moon pool. And as it's kind of pulling back, we see Coffee see it, kind of freaking out. Mind you, in this time, we're seeing that Coffee is not well. He's getting a little bit of the symptoms that we have been told to look out for, which include paranoia. This pressure sickness includes paranoia. He is like shaky and sweaty. And he's like, I think he says, like, that alien looks like it's after the warhead. Like, he's what? Just a little, he's not well. But so as the little saltwater tunnel is retracting, he closes a hatch on it, breaking it in half, and the half on the other side of the hatch, it collapses back into water on the ground, and it turns at him and is kind of like, and then retreats back into the moon pool.
Yeah, so Lindsay's all pissed off, obviously, because she's like, that alien was trying to make contact with us, and now we just...
You closed a door on it.
You were aggressive.
I was making good progress with it on a personal level, and
you ruined it.
You ruined
it. Hippie says, like, I don't think that was the alien, and they kind of, as a group, reach the conclusion that the aliens can control water. And that this was them sending a signal. It wasn't the actual alien, but it was them. It was them manipulating water to kind of reach out and communicate from afar. And while sure. they're having this conversation, we see Coffee slicing into his arm with a knife, just cutting big gashes into his arm, hidden under a table so no one else can see. And he's just kind of shaking and grimacing and cutting into his own arm. It's
oh my God, very unsettling. No.
And I guess he's just doing that because he's in going insane. Like, is there a reason why he's cutting into his arm?
I think he's I don't know. He's insane. Angry okay. and doesn't know.
Just sort of losing
yeah,
it.
I think so. It. I think so.
Ugh.
And he goes and talks to the other SEAL team guys. You know, there's a group of, I think, maybe 4 or 5 SEAL team guys. And he's like, that alien is after the warhead and they think it's cute and they don't realize how dangerous this could be. Like, that's alien life. And we need to take this into our own hands. This is on us. And the SEAL team is kind of like on board at this moment. And they're like, okay, yeah, like arm up with guns. They like grab guns and they're like, okay, yeah, this is serious and scary and we need to be prepared for whatever could happen. And then Hippie is spying on Coffee because they've kind of obviously noticed he's being a little weird. And he's Coffee attaching the nuclear warhead to an exploratory like camera sub, you know, those like from like National Geographic that are just like little mini things,
mm-hmm.
beep, even beep, cuter beep, than yep. the last sub.
Oh my god, an even smaller little sub.
It's so cute. Oh, we'll post all these pictures of these cute little baby vessels.
This information to Bud and is basically saying, you know, Coffee's lost it. Tensions are rising. Hippie says, I programmed that camera thing to go down to explore the aliens. He's basically, he got a nuclear warhead without telling anyone and is now attaching it to this thing that's programmed to go down to where we saw the aliens. And he might be straight up starting a war with aliens right now.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, those are high stakes.
Mm-hmm. And at this point, he's kind of gone so far off his rocker that the rest of the SEAL team is kind of like, I don't know. Like,
oops.
Like, we're not sure about this. And I think one of them's yelling at him. He's like, we gotta like go down there and we gotta explode all those aliens. And they're like, we'll all die from that. Like, it's a nuclear bomb and we will all die in the wake of that. He's on his own now. He doesn't care. He's on a mission.
So he's like going like insane by himself. And then Ed Harris is like creeping up on him, trying to stop him from releasing this warhead. And everyone's like, don't do that. He's going to kill you. He's a SEAL. He's a Navy SEAL. He'll kill you. And he's like, no, I'm Ed Harris. And
I'm a man in black.
So
ever heard of me?
Yeah, he's like,
ever heard of me?
Exactly. And so he attacks him to try to stop him.
And Coffee pulls a gun on him and immediately pulls the trigger in his forehead. And there's no bullets. And we see it cuts back to the rest of the SEAL team and they have taken his bullets because they knew he was not well, which is kind of a fun moment.
That's smart. Mm-hmm. It's fun. And that's honestly smarter than taking the gun, because you take the gun, you know something's up. You take the bullets out, he steals the gun, but he can't do anything with it. I guess you could hit someone over the head with it, which
would
hurt.
Well, they do get in a big fist fight in this scene.
Sure, sure.
It proves, beyond a point that this dude is unsafe, too. The fact that he didn't even hesitate.
Yeah.
So then he steals the submarine.
Yes.
And
they get in a big fist fight. Coffee gets away, gets in this sub. He's like, it's a little baby sub, and he's strapped the even babier sub on top of it with the warhead strapped to that. And so he's like, I'm going to go drop this off and launch.
I'm going to go drop this off. It's like, excuse me 1 minute. I'm going to go drop this off.
It's like nesting dolls. It's like the Russian nesting dolls.
Yes,
it's just like one
a sub
tinier,
and a sub and a sub and a sub.
Just one tinier little sub within each other sub. I love it.
Cute.
And goes and chases him in just a underwater spacesuit. He chases a full submarine just by swimming.
And okay.
he gets onto it and he gets a rope and he detaches the mini sub carrying the warhead and ties it onto the main rig to basically prevent him from being able to launch it at the aliens. And Coffee goes to press to launch it and sees it starting to go and then get pulled back by the rope that it is tied by. And so Coffee gets very mad, turns around in his submarine, and he starts chasing Bud in the submarine and like trying to pin him against rocks and walls. So it's like a submarine on man fight.
Okay.
And then Lindsay comes out in submarine number 2, and now we're getting sub on sub fight.
And now, what is the size of Lindsay's submarine relative to the other submarines we have?
It's
in
the
this
same
scene
as Coffee's size, so adorable size.
Okay,
it's
adorable. A cutie.
It's a cutie, not a baby.
Snack size. Oh my god, a snack size, not a fun size, but
it's
a
not
snack
fun size.
Size.
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
They get in a submarine fight, a snack size sub fight.
We've all been there.
Classic.
Gets in the way, blocks him somehow, and yells, "Get in," which is so crazy underwater to be like, "Hop in." Like, what? What?
Yeah.
You're so far underwater. But I guess submarines or these little explorer subs have, you know, pressure valves, whatever. I'll allow it. I'm sure it's probably real. I'm sure James Cameron did his research. He seems like the type to do research. And then the little baby sub, the fun size sub with the warhead attached to it, gets loose and starts heading down to the aliens. And so...
Because the rope breaks. I've stopped watching at this point.
No, it doesn't break. It just, he tied a pretty shitty knot.
So, Haley, did you stop mid-submarine fight? Is that when you turned this movie off?
I was like, not paying. I watching a horror movie before work and
yeah, let's
not
be clear, listeners. She watched it at 8 a.m. this morning.
Yeah, and I was also like, also looking at my email, like having panic attacks about a variety
of
different
things.
Yeah,
it's a hard time to focus for sure. So Lindsay's sub has the little clampy arm thing that previously they needed to use to detach from whatever thing they were attached to. She tries to clamp the rope and gets it, but then Coffee comes in his sub. They hits it again, hits the fun size sub out, and it again starts going down to the aliens. They get in another big sub fight. Basically, she pushes Coffee's sub into a wall, a rock wall, and knocks him over the edge of that second abyss. And his sub loses power and he tumbles in. And we see from his POV the glass in his submarine cracking and breaking, and we see his sub implode, and it looks really good and crazy and scary.
So you're starting to see how so much of this movie was filmed underwater.
I'm starting to see it. Obviously, fighting with submarines is a bad idea, and their submarine has taken some damage and is now filling with water, and only Bud is in a
underwater ski suit.
I was going to call it ski suit, too. Underwater space suit.
An underwater swimsuit.
And they kind of have like a moment of him like taking it off and being like, put this on. She's like, no, you're the better swimmer. She comes up with this plan, which says the water's freezing. They're so deep and she's shivering. The sub is filling with water. She's shivering. She's so cold. You're the better swimmer. If I pass out, I will have hypothermia and I can be hypothermic for like 15 minutes or so. And then you can revive me. So you, as the faster swimmer, put on your suit and take me out, like basically drag me unconscious underwater back to the main station and then revive me.
Wait, is this when her like top is off?
It's come. It's soon, okay. Soon. And it's in this moment that we start to see the true depth of their love for each other in this near death moment.
No pun intended.
They kiss. She kisses because, you know, she thinks she's maybe going to die. And this plan is not great. And the sub fills up with water. She holds her breath to a point that she passes out, which in water, I don't think would be possible. Like, I think you would just drown. Like, I don't think you can make yourself not breathe underwater. Like, your instinct would be to breathe.
Yeah, maybe you could hyperventilate and get yourself to pass out that way, you know, like how you can make yourself. But just by holding your breath, I don't know.
It seems weird, but.
Wait, she's actually in water right now. Wouldn't you
Listeners,
just die
are you starting
from the
to
pressure?
Get it?
You starting to get it?
But she's not in. What I mean is, she's not in like the submarine.
They are in the submarine at this moment.
They are in the submarine.
But the submarine is filling with water.
Oh, I see.
But they go out of the submarine, and I had that question as well. Where it, you know, as I mentioned earlier, every 32 feet is an atmosphere of pressure. If she doesn't have a suit, I think the second you go out of that submarine, your fucking bones are caving in. Yeah, right.
Yeah, your lungs 100% collapse. Definitely collapse.
So, you know, that's humorous. Goof.
James, that's a goof.
But so she passes out, and the second she passes out, Bud goes, "No!" As if it like wasn't the plan that they just agreed on. It's really weird. But then he sets out, and he's swimming real quick back to the main rig. And through his comms in his helmet, he's saying to the crew inside, like, "You get ready, 10 cc's of adrenaline and the, you know, little shocker paddle things." And they get there. This is where Lindsay is topless. He, like, rips open her shirt for them to be able to do the electro shock paddles or whatever they're called. They're doing, you know, clear. He's pounding on her chest, trying to get her heart back in rhythm. And it's a really, really intense scene. And I actually think it's a really good scene. Ed Harris is really good in it. She looks really dead. The makeup is very good. And I will say about her being naked, it's like, I barely even noticed it. It is done in, I think, a pretty like respectful way. It's not like, "And now look at her boobs." It's like, it's only, I think, visible in like one shot for a second, and it's like not sexy. It's like you're just stressed in this scene and worried for her. And for a long time she's not coming back, and screams at her like, "You stubborn bitch, like you never gave up a fight in your life.
Call her a bitch. Call her, call her a bitch one more time."
Slaps her across the face really hard, and that like,
and she probably deserved that, it. Like,
does the trick, and she wakes up, and I guess all she needed was a good slap and to be called a bitch again, and voila, she's alive.
Ugh. Cool.
Cool. Fucking cool.
Okay, so she's alive. They kiss again, I bet. they love each other now. Which, I don't know. I just feel like the whole premise of, like, a divorcing couple, like, discovering that they still love each other is so...
It happens a lot in movies, considering I feel like how rarely it happens in life.
I don't think it happens in life that much. And I just feel like... most of the time, there's a very good reason to get divorced. People don't just get divorced because they're in a fight. It's like, we've exhausted all other options. And I just feel like James Cameron is just like, has some problems in this respect. He's working out some things.
I agree. I think also a central point of their relationship in this movie is that they weren't prioritizing each other, as we found out in the beginning. And they didn't have enough time for each other. And, you know, when do you have more time than when you're stuck in an abyss with your ex? You know, it's like, this isn't real life, you guys. Like, I wonder if the relationship is really going to work out afterwards.
Classic, like, Bachelor situation. Mm-hmm. These are extreme circumstances.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Let's not make any rash decisions when we're in an abyss together, you know?
You know, what happens in the abyss stays in the abyss.
Probably.
But okay, so they've brought her back. Everything is looking good, except that dang nuclear warhead is still headed for those aliens.
Right. Yes, okay, right.
And so Bud there's to go retrieve it, but because it's so deep, he has to breathe that old fluorinated liquid shit.
Liquid lungs.
And he puts on his helmet and it starts filling. Lindsay is now like obsessed with him and is like, "Oh my God, no, he looks like he's having a hard time." And like is a little over dramatic about the whole thing. It's like, bitch.
bitch. I said, bitch.
Bitch, we saw the rat do it. It's fine.
It's fine, bitch. Okay.
But so he can't text thing on his wrist, so he'll be communicating to them by text. And Hippie has another fun size little camera sub programmed also to the same way to go to the same location. And he says, just piggyback on this, like hold on to this. It'll take you right to the same location where the warhead is. Great. He hops on. They're like, that's, you're going to be, this is going to be, you know, the deepest any human has ever gone. Careful. Careful.
Careful.
And I think the scariest shot of the film is him standing at the edge of this abyss. And it's just like black. It's like him in his underwater spacesuit looking into just blackness. And then he jumps into it and disappears.
That's really scary. You would definitely be crushed. I feel like that's a super obvious logical fallacy, right?
I mean, well, that's, they've added in the liquid to you know, pad
right.
the
so
theory.
I guess the liquid would be fine.
Sure.
But so he can hear them. So they're saying to him like, oh, you just passed like the record of how deep a human has ever gone. And he texts like, call Guinness. They're laughing. Okay. We're having fun. And then one of the crewmen is like calling out his depth and he's like 8,500 feet, 10,000 feet. And they're like, okay, ask him like how he's doing. If, you know, this pressurized sickness or whatever, ask him how he's feeling. He types in all like spelled wrong, like hands shaking, like HNNDSSHK, like not doing well. And they're like, Lindsay, talk to him, keep him with us. And she's like, bud, like I'm there with you, I love you. She's getting very emotional. You know, he might die, so I get it. Yeah. We're at 12,000 feet, and then they're like, okay, check back in with him, bud, like how are you? And he's typing like full gibberish now, like it's just symbols and letters nonsense. Lindsay is sobbing and crying like, oh my god, he's dying. We see that the like shot of him falling is really good. I think this is the scene in which Ed Harris the actor almost drowned because his helmet is filled with,
oh my god,
liquid, and he's being kind of tossed and turned about in a way that looks,
oh,
and so
my
he's supposed
god.
To just hold his breath in this liquid because he did not use the oxygenated liquid because I don't think they've used it on humans.
Sure,
but,
yeah.
He's kind of free falling, and the little fun size sub explodes from the pressure, and so he's now just full free falling, like surrounded by black, just looks so scary. He's on the comm saying like, I know how alone you feel, but I'm there with you. I'm in the darkness with you. Like, I love you. I'm by your side always. And connection with him. And they're kind of like, oh my god, we've lost him. And then we get a text that says, feeling better, spelled all correctly. And he says, see light everywhere. And they're like, oh my god, he's hallucinating so badly. And it's like, I don't know, or maybe.
Remember all the lights
maybe.
That we saw?
Aliens that we've seen multiple times.
That he's heading straight towards.
He lands right next to that warhead, thank god. Even though he's lost grip of
thank
his
god.
Previous little thing that he's hitchhiking a ride on. Anyways, he lands next to it and he texts them like, I'm here, I see the warhead. And the SEAL team guy says, okay, you need to cut the blue line, the blue cord with the white stripe, not the black cord with the yellow stripe. But the way that the lighting works under there, they look the same. It's just like bright yellow light. And you know how that takes color out of everything.
Oh, god.
So they just look the same. And he's okay cutting and goes to cut one, and he's about to cut it, and then he looks like, wait a second, and he cuts the other one, and it's fine.
So maybe the alien gave him a message?
I don't know. I think it's more like,
what to do?
Don't trust your instincts, like, save your failed marriage. I felt like it was a very weird messaging right there. I don't know. It's like, what is this moment of just like, wait, your instinct is to run away when really you should stay. I don't know. I don't know what it means.
That's probably it. I mean, that's right. That's a good armchair analysis.
Yeah.
I felt like everything was just about the marriage.
I think you're right.
But
or the Soviets.
Could be
or
the Soviets.
Or it could be the Soviets.
It's maybe it's more about the Cold War, probably.
But so he cuts it and it works. And so he texts back like, done. They all cheer. We did it. And they say, okay, how much oxygen do you have left? Like, come back up. And he says, only 5 minutes. And they say it took him 30 minutes to get down there. And she says, cut your weights. Just come up. Like, if you get, like, we have a, you know, hyperbaric chamber in here, whatever. Just come up fast. And he texts, thinking of staying a while. I knew this was a one-way ticket. And he sits down and is like, you know, sacrificing himself for the good of his crew and humanity, not starting a war with those aliens. Lindsay is sobbing, screaming like, you bastard, don't you fucking leave me. Whatever, she didn't say fuck, PG-13. Don't you leave me, you bastard. Fight for this. And he texts, I love you, wife, which I thought was really funny. Just like, how can I show you that I recommitted?
I want her to know it's for her. How do I
say?
She's gone from bitch
she's
to wife.
She's been upgraded, baby.
Oh,
baby,
my God.
As far as women go, that's the top.
Those are the two options. Those are the two options.
You go from bitch to wife all in a day? Excuse me?
That's a character arc, if I've ever seen one. Okay, so Bud is just laying back, accepting his death. And would you believe it? An alien swims right up to him.
They go so fast.
And
they go so fast. They zip around.
It's got big eyes and no mouth and holds out it.
Big eyes, no mouth, can't lose.
I read because it's the opposite of the alien in Aliens, which has a big mouth and no eyes.
Okay, so that's how you can know whether or not you can trust an alien.
Yeah, the good versus bad. I got it. Clocking that.
So it holds it. It reaches out its hand, grabs his hand, and swim flies him to Alien City, a big landscape of phosphorescent kind of alien building things. Ed Harris is looking like, ooh, oh my God.
What? This actually happens? Yes,
this actually happens. And it takes him into this like room that then the water moves out of the way, giving him oxygen, I guess. And so he takes his helmet off. He vomits up all that water that he's been breathing because you have to, like, it's in your lungs.
Ew.
Stands up and looks at the aliens and says, howdy, how you guys doing? That's his. And they then play back his text messages to him on the wall. And so it says, like, I love you, wife, projected on this water wall. And they just, like, look at each other.
You're my water wall.
Then they start singing that song. It's so interesting.
They're singing Wonderwall, but the words are water wall.
Honestly, that could happen at this point. And I'd be like, okay.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And then we go back to the main rig, and, you know, Lindsay is heartbroken, thinks Bud is dead. They haven't heard from him. They're crying. The communications get restored to the main ship. They call up to them and say, you know, we lost a lot of crew, including Bud. And just then a text comes through that says, whatever his full name is, his name's Virgil something, reporting for duty. And they all laugh like, oh my God, he's alive. He's not dead. And he texts, I have some new friends. Lindsay's smiling like, oh my God, you freaking trickster. You got us. And he says, texts, hold on to your pantyhose. You're gonna love this. And there starts being shaking, and on the ship above, this is where Roland shit has a couple lines, and he says, there's something coming up from below. And they say, from where? From where? And he says, from everywhere. And we see out of the water come these big, like, alien things that we saw from the city. It's basically like the whole alien city coming up, and it lifts up the whole rig and the whole ship on the surface, basically pulls everything out of the water and then floats above the water, which, like, Cindy and the crew get out of the rig. And from this opening in the alien city thing, out walks Bud, and he's alive. And they walk up to each other and share a big kiss. And that's the end of the movie.
All right.
Whoa.
All right.
Wow.
But I will say there, you know, obviously we watched the 2-hour-and-20 theatrical version. There is a 2-hour-and-50-minute version. In which, in this final scene, the aliens, tidal waves happen everywhere, so that there's tidal waves descending on literally every shore, and somehow communicate like, you humans gotta stop being bad.
Oh my God, James, okay, buddy, I mean... All right.
And then decide not to. They're basically, it's a flex. They're like, we could kill you. And they decide not to because Bud showed kindness and decency. And then they're like, cool. All right, never mind. You know, it's a Cold War, you know, metaphor. Or anti-Cold War, should I say. Anti-war. But yeah, that's the movie. I would say it's really not too scary aside from water being scary. So listeners, check it out. It is interesting that it's like probably James Cameron's least popular movie. And it,
yeah, I was going to say, is it good? I can't tell.
I think it is good. I mean, I think the third act isn't great, but overall, like, it's pretty exciting and it looks really good. I think the acting is good. Unfortunately, I think this insane production paid off. It looks great.
I love Ed Harris. That makes it good to me because I just love him so much.
He's good. I think everyone's good.
All right.
And it does look really good for a movie that was made in 1989. I think that it holds up. I think that it is, the story could have been a little tighter.
Mm-hmm, for sure.
I don't know. There's so many, I think for me, I got lost pretty quickly in all the ship stuff that was happening, where it was like, they're in one submarine, then they're in another submarine.
Then a smaller submarine, and an even smaller submarine.
Yeah.
I was kind of like, I don't know exactly. And also the nuclear warhead, like, kind of looks like a submarine in a way. Mm-hmm. So it's like, mm-hmm. everything kind of, I was just like, I don't know what's happening.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
I also wasn't paying too close attention.
You were stressed about your work emails, and you can't even use your heating pad while you're at work.
You can't use your heating pad. The day has started. I mean, my God.
I think it was fun. I think it's a good movie. I recommend it.
And I gotta say, listeners, thank you very much for picking the not shark movie. I appreciate it.
It was so close. We really had a lot of people who were very upset that we weren't going to be doing Jaws.
I've seen Jaws. It's the only shark movie I've seen. I do really like it. It's a great movie.
It's a great movie.
And it, even though the shark is like pretty fake, it's still, it's just the idea of a shark being present is too much
for
me.
We should do Deep Blue Sea. I'm sad really I didn't include that.
I don't wanna, but I guess that's the point.
we will do Jaws on this eventually. We'll do it soon. Okay. I'm sure.
Learn anything?
The deep ocean is terrifying.
Aside from of actors' rights and the
actors' rights,
the splendor of vessels,
the splendor of vessels, the importance of actors' rights, and the few options available to women
from bitch to wife, and we learned
bitch to wife in 60 seconds.
One option you have. You don't need to take it, but one option you have when you are confronted with an alien is to taste it.
You could taste it. You could taste it if you wanted to. As long as it's after the hours of 8 p.m. Monday through Friday, you could taste the alien.
Mm-hmm. Hey, this is not what the lesson that was, taught to us, but a personal lesson that I have learned in life is it's okay to get divorced.
Yeah, it's okay to get divorced.
It's okay to get divorced. And you know what? I'm going to take it a step further and say sometimes it rules.
Sometimes it's good.
It rules.
Sometimes it's good to get divorced. Mm-hmm. And that is a lesson because definitely at first I was like, oh, well, I don't want to be married, but I don't want to be divorced.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And it's like, just like with women, bitch or wife, pick one. and that's what it was. But it can be really good. It can be really good.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Sammy, thank you so much for walking us through yet another movie.
You both watched some of this movie this week. I'm the only one who sat on my little tush and didn't do a damn thing. So thank you.
Hey, you're welcome. Listen, and I don't know. I don't think there were any voices in this movie except for Ed Harris screaming, "No!" a lot. I think he did scream it twice, actually, when he was like pounding on her chest, too. Maybe we could just scream the ending, like, and call our listeners bitches.
Yeah, I love that idea. I love that idea. I love it.
Then maybe end it with wife, too. Like you are such a bitch, but also you're my wife.
I love you, wife.
What I like about this idea, Sammy, is how simple it is and how clear.
The meaning, the intention is clear.
Yeah, what I like about it is it's really straightforward. And so no further explanation. Let's do exactly what you said.
Okay, the count of three.
Okay, on the count of three. From all of us here at Too Scared and Watch.
Bye.
Goodbye.
Goodbye. I love you. You're my wife.
That you're my wife. And that's the best ending we've ever had.
Hi, everybody. Thank you for listening to another episode of Too Scary Didn't Watch. If you are liking the show, please remember to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts so you never miss an episode. And if you have time, you can rate and review us on Apple Podcasts. That really helps us out. You can also support us by joining our Patreon at patreon.com/TSDW podcast or follow us on Instagram and Twitter at TSDW podcast. And on Instagram, we are still doing polls for our October episode. So head on over there. And the winner of the sequels bracket and the movie for our next episode will be Paranormal Activity 2. So check that out if you want to watch it before next week. Love you guys. Bye.